So joining us today is Olga Knight from Cadillac Beauchamp. She's our pension consultant. And Brent Howie from Retirement Services, who is our PI pension plan provider. We're going to be doing a presentation today. First off, starting with Olga. Mm-hmm. And she's going to go through the purpose of the pension plan, why plans for retirement, different investment vehicles that can use, things like that. And then there'll be turned over to Brent, who will talk about the changes to the fund menu and services and supplies by GRS for your pension plan. After that, we're going to have a question and answer period. The ladies, there's three out there, so go and grab it on you. Talking to you. So there'll be a question and answer period. So if you have any questions during the presentation that you think of, you can just stop them down on a piece of paper. That way we can make sure that people who have time commitments are out and get the full presentation instead of being maybe set back by some questions. So if you wouldn't mind doing that, I'd greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Sue. Good afternoon, everyone. As Sue said, my name is Olga Knight, and I work at Cadillac Beauchamp. We're an employee benefits consulting firm here in town. And we're going to be, Brent and I, talking about retirement programs today, specifically your program. And I'm going to cover off some of these items on the agenda. In the next hour. I won't take up the whole hour. I will take up part of it. Some information about retirement planning concepts about why we should plan. We all know that, but why should we? Retirement income replacement, government income programs. I'm going to talk a little bit about that so we know about that. We'll talk about the retirement program, the roles, the responsibilities surrounding that. And then Brent's going to talk about investing and the investments under your program. There's some changes to the fund menu that he's going to review. You've already seen that in the notice, so you've already been briefed on that. So he's going to give you a little bit more information on that. And then he's going to speak about the services and support that are provided to you through GRS, which is your record keeper. Okay? And we'll have lots of time, hopefully, at the end for questions. These are some questions about why I plan for retirement, how much do I need in retirement income, how much can I contribute, should I contribute, how do I know where to invest my money, how can I best use investment strategies. These kinds of things we're always thinking about with retirement planning. Really, a successful program is a balance. And you need to have some sort of idea of what type of retirement you're going to have, and what kind of retirement income you're going to need. You're trying to balance this teeter-totter, which is understanding your retirement needs, as well as the contributions needed for those needs. So it's sort of a balancing act. Suffice it to say that the more income you need in retirement, the more contributions you probably have to put into the plan, as well as investing that money wisely. So it's a balancing act. The higher the income, the greater the level of contribution that you need to strike a balance. But let's talk further about retirement planning and why you should plan. This chart illustrates the need for planning, in that if we look at an average working career, generally we start working at around the age of 25, let's say, and retiring at age 65. Now that's not the same for everybody, but let's say we're in the workforce about 40 years. Over time, our income increases, and lo and behold, our expenses increase as well. So instead of buying shoes at Payless or buying shoes at Town Shoes or what have you, our expenses go up as our income goes up. That's inevitable. When you reach your retirement date, whenever that may be, your working income ends, but of course your expenses continue. So generally, in retirement, our expenses are a little bit less than when we were working. And that's because we may be spending less on things like our clothing, our transportation, our mortgages paid, that sort of thing. So hopefully our expenses are a little bit less in retirement. However, as we age, we also have an increase in expenses in terms of things like property taxes, utilities, medical expenses, things like that, and inflation. Inflation is starting to perhaps erode our purchasing power of our retirement income. So that's a really key thing in retirement, a key concern. So where does that leave you? Well, basically, depending on your income in retirement, when you are working, government benefits will provide a base level income from, this is from Canada Pension and Old Age Security, and that's represented by that level line at the bottom there. The difference between where your expenses are and that line from the government is a gap of income that you'll need to fund. And part of that funding is going to come through your retirement program here. And that's going to form a piece of your retirement income. There'll be other sources that hopefully you will have. So that's kind of how our income and expenses look during our lifetime. Another reason why we need to save is that we're living longer, and I don't need to tell you that. I'm sure you already know that. And on average, women are living a little bit longer than men. So not a big surprise there. This chart looks at things a little bit more differently, because I was talking a little bit about inflation risk before on your money in retirement. There's also the risk of longevity. How long are you going to actually live? We don't know that for sure, of course. But this chart kind of illustrates, it's kind of interesting. If you look at a Canadian couple at age 65 today, what is the probability that they'll survive to age 70? So the probability of that is that there's a 93% chance that the wife's going to live to age 70, 88 for the husband, who jump over to age 80. What are the chances that the 65-year-old couple will live to age 80? The wife has a 68.78% chance of living to age 80. So you can see there's a very good chance of, that people today are going to be living well beyond what my previous chart said, that said on average women live to age 81 or what have you. So this is probably more telling as to how long we possibly could live. As I briefly mentioned before, our retirement income is a little bit less than our working income, generally speaking. And that's because it's really difficult to replace 100% of your working income. But luckily, we should be able to live on less. And generally, retirement planners will say you need about 70% to maintain a level of lifestyle that you had while you were working. And you're probably wondering, well, 70%, how can I live on 70%? 100% I can barely make it. And generally that's because hopefully the mortgage payments are gone, you're not making your CPP EI contributions anymore, you're not making those RSP or pension contributions anymore, your work expenses may be a little bit less, and hopefully the children have grown up and have left home and are independent and self-sufficient, haven't come home to live with mom and dad. So generally speaking, 70% is an objective. Most retirees today, though, are living on about 45 to 62% of their pre-retirement income. So it is a tough endeavor. You'll probably notice that there is a trend with retirement right now, and it will continue, that a lot of retirees are going back into the workforce. And that's only going to increase. Now, this slide illustrates what the maximum government benefits are today in 2006. Maximum benefit means that to achieve that through the CPP, you would have paid into the Canada Pension Plan the annual maximum premium every year for most of your working career. So for this year, that limit, that upper limit, is an income of about $42,100. So if you have been paying the maximum into CPP for most of your working career, and will continue to, you'll probably get the maximum pension. Maximum pension today is $844 a month for a 65-year-old. You can receive the CPP earlier than age 65. It will be reduced. So for age 60, it's $591 a month. The Old Age Security, OAS, this is another government program here in Canada. This is paid out of general tax revenues. You're not paying into it directly or funding it directly, so to speak. It's the same for everyone as long as you're a resident in Canada and you've lived here 40 years after your 18th birthday. So that amount is about $484 a month. Both of these benefits, CPP, Old Age Security, are indexed for inflation. So they will increase as people age. So on an annual basis, you can see that the maximum amount is about $16,000 a year in income from the government. So it's not a tremendous amount of money, but it's also nothing to sneeze at. I look at this as a nice base to my retirement income. That's that level income that I was showing you on that chart earlier on. Today, the average pension payment from CPP is about $525. So not everyone receives that maximum, and that's the message that I want you to take from this as well. Women generally are paid a little bit less from CPP because they've earned less throughout their working career. And men have a little bit higher payment. Here's some information where you can get a little bit more information about CPP and Old Age Security. The website from SDC is very good, and there's lots of information on there. We could talk about the CPP and Old Age Security for about 3 hours. There's a lot of information, a lot of benefits, and I always get the question, will it be there when I retire? And today, as far as we know, the actuaries are telling us that the plan is in very good shape. So we're very confident that these plans will be around when we're retiring and when you retire. This chart shows us sources of income for a typical retiree. I hope you can see that. The Old Age Security, remember that amount that I was showing you, that's about $485 a month? And that's the same for every OAS recipient. That makes up the biggest portion of someone's retirement income today. The other piece, the blue part to the right there, is the CPP, so 23%. So you can see more than half of a typical retiree's income is made up of government benefits right now. That's interesting. The other pension section, this could be from employer pensions, that sort of thing. The RSP piece is very little, and that might surprise you. But if we think about that, today's retiree is probably 65 and older. They probably didn't save in an RSP for as long as we probably will. Because RSPs weren't that really popular until the 70s and 80s. When people really started stocking it away. The gray area is the other investments, and that generally is non-registered type savings, mutual funds, things like that. Equity in the home might form a portion, that sort of thing. The black is other income. The black is probably, and is, working income. And I would expect that black portion is going to increase as the years go by in terms of the total income. The portion of the income for a retiree, that's going to increase. So just switching gears a little bit, I just want to talk a little bit about your program here at Perimeter. You have a registered pension plan. And just to briefly describe what the purpose of the plan is, just so that everyone is clear, it's to assist employees in saving for retirement and to provide an income at retirement, which is in addition to government benefits and income that's provided through personal investments and savings. So it's going to form a piece of your total retirement income. Sometimes we need to remind employees it's not going to form the most portion of the income in retirement. It forms a piece along with the other pieces that I described. In the management of your retirement program, there are different stakeholders. You have the Institute, you have GRS, you have the investment managers, they're managing your money, and you, the member, you have a stake in this program. And everybody has responsibilities in operating this program. As a sponsor of the plan, Perimeter ensures that your contributions are sent to the record keeper on a timely basis. They've selected the record keeper with our help as consultants. This is our job. We help the plan sponsor in maintaining and monitoring and governing this program. We help to select and monitor the investments and the fund managers so that you have the best possible choices available to you at all times. Monitoring the program, that's a very important piece of the program. Providing information to you, like having sessions like this so that you can attend and learn about the program. And paying the fees. Perimeter Institute is paying fees on your behalf in the operation of this program so that you can save for retirement at a reasonable price. Now GRS, which is Great West, London Life, Canada Life, all combined into one, is the record keeper. They were selected a number of years ago, and they keep your records, they send you statements, they also monitor the investments and the managers, and they develop the member tools. You'll be seeing some today. There is a website, and Brent's going to talk about this in a little bit, and they provide you with assistance as well. There are investment managers, and a number of them that work through GRS. And of course, fund managers, they research and they buy and sell stocks and bonds and other securities in the management of the funds that you're using. You, the member, you have an important part as well. You are contributing into the program. You need to understand your investment somewhat because you'll be choosing and developing a strategy. You need to monitor your account from time to time. You need to look at it and update your personal information, and you too are paying fees. Now, the fees that you're paying are through the investments, the investment management fees, and I think Brent's going to talk a little bit about that in a little while. So it's important as your role to listen, to pay attention to your program from time to time, learn as much as you can, and seek help when you need to. It's a good idea at some point in time to seek the help of a qualified financial planner to help you to plan for your retirement and other financial needs. You are participating in a group program. It's a group pension plan, and I know that you have received information about that. You have details on how the plan provisions work, how much you need to contribute, when you're vested, all those things. So I don't need to really review that with you. But some of the benefits that you're deriving from this program is that the company's putting money in, and that's always a good thing. Your employer is paying fees toward the operation plan, like I said. As a program through work, your contributions are payroll deducted. So in of that, just that is a great convenience because you know as well as I do, what you don't have in your pocket, you don't spend. And as David Chilton once said, pay yourself first, because that's really the best way to accumulate wealth. The money going into the program and the growth of that money is all tax sheltered. So you're not paying a penny of tax while that money is in your registered pension plan. And that's just very much like any RSP as well. That money is sheltered from income tax until you start income, and then you pay tax on the money you received in a given year. The investments are wholesale priced, and I talked a little bit about the fees before, and Brent's going to show you what they are. Think of these fees as being wholesale priced. So if you were to buy the same funds on a retail basis, you would be paying higher fees. In addition to those wholesale price fees, there are no front-end fees, there's no back-end fees, or trailer fees, or switching fees, like you might have through mutual funds, through a retail outlet. So that's a really good benefit. This is pretty much my conclusion for my remarks. At Cowan-Wright Beauchamp, we can assist the members of the program as well in providing you with some understanding of the pension plan or talking about your investor profile, helping you understand options at retirement and at termination. If you leave the perimeter, you will take the money with you as long as you're vested. And we help people do a transition into retirement as well. So I will ask Brenton.
Okay, so we're just going to get into what kind of an investor you are. If you can open up the brochures that are in front of you there. On the right-hand side at the back is a brochure entitled Investment Personality Questionnaire. We're going to go through it here today. Does everyone have pens? Does anyone require a pen? If you do have some, please let us know if you need one. Okay. So I'm going to start off by reading the first question. What is the purpose of your investments in this plan? Please select the most appropriate one. Given that you are investing in a pension plan, the first couple responses there are to go on a vacation, buy a new car, use it as a down payment for a house are not options. So you'd actually be looking at even financing your children's education is not really an option unless you're planning on retiring by the time they're going to school. So primarily you'll be looking at the responses retirement savings and to leave an estate for your family. To the left of each of those responses is the number 10 in brackets. You'll take the number 10 and put it in the box to the right. Okay, so if I get you to go through the questionnaire, and please feel free to ask any questions that you may have on the questions themselves. When you get to question number 3, in approximately how many years will you retire from work? Please be realistic in your response, be honest. I would like to retire tomorrow, but I can't afford to, so just try to be honest. There are no right or wrong answers. Thank you. I'm going to start talking. You don't necessarily have to listen. Hopefully you have been listening to Olga and myself so far. If you're still completing your questionnaire, though, please continue. At the end of the 16 questions, you'll come out with 16 numbers in the boxes. If you can add them up, you'll end up coming out as one of five different types of an investor. Let's say you come out with a score of 110. Our suggestion to you is that you are a conservative investor, and on the back of the questionnaire itself, we would suggest that you have between 70 to 75% of your assets in fixed income. An example of fixed income is a bond fund. Gradually, as you become more and more aggressive in your investment approach, more and more of your assets are held in equities, to the point where if you came out as an aggressive investor, we would suggest that you have 100% of your assets in equities. Just to go through the different asset classes, on one axis I have the historical rates of return. On the other is the volatility or the level of risk that you're exposed to. Starting in the lower left-hand corner, you have guaranteed investments available on your plan, ranging up to 5 years in term. Cash and equivalents, you have a money market fund available on your plan. Fixed income, an example would be a bond fund. Balanced would be a balanced fund. You have a number of balanced funds to choose from. Canadian equity, the most predominant underlying investment would be stock in a publicly traded Canadian company. I'm just going to skip over special equity for a second. Foreign equity would be any investment outside of Canada, including the US. And getting back to special equity, you actually have three special equity funds on your plan. There is a technology fund, there is also a science and technology fund, as well as a real estate fund. Just to give you an idea of why it's considered special equity rather than Canadian equity or foreign equity, it's because it's industry specific or a specific industry sector. As I say, a technology fund, science and technology, our real estate fund, the most predominant underlying investment is commercial real estate, and you know, it could be held in Canada or outside of Canada, so it's certainly not exclusively Canadian equity or foreign equity. Okay, so upon coming out of the questionnaire, really you have a decision to make. We've made a suggestion on the back of the questionnaire in terms of which asset classes you should be looking at. You then have a decision as to whether or not you are going to pick the funds yourself, and I'll go through how you would go about doing that now. Alternatively, you can go into the asset allocation funds, and on your plan they're called portfolio funds. So in terms of picking the funds yourself, I do notice that there are a couple people with binders or with the retirement guides that you were handed when you first joined the plan. They would have had the latest information at that point in time. They would have had fund reports on all of the funds that are available on your plan. There would have been an investment menu that would have listed the various asset classes that I had up here earlier. But also within those asset classes, it would have indicated which funds are available. If you are going to pick the funds yourself, I would suggest your starting point would be looking at the investment menu. Beyond that, just looking at the funds that are available under a given asset class. Beyond that, within the folder that you have in front of you, we have rates of return for the period ending May 31st. Certainly you'd be looking at that information. But more importantly, or I would suggest one of the most important places to look would be the fund report itself. There's a fund report on every fund that's available on your plan. It provides a lot of information about the fund manager. It speaks to the investment style of the fund itself, talks about the different asset classes that the fund invests in, gives you the top 10 holdings, or the top number of holdings within a fund, provides you with some performance history on the fund itself as to how the fund has performed over the last number of years, as well as comparing it to its respective benchmark. So a lot of information on the fund report itself, and those would be the tools that you would use in picking the funds. Alternatively, there are asset allocation funds available on your plan. As I said, they are called portfolio funds. And if I can get you to pull out the brochure on the right, entitled Portfolio Funds, please. So within each portfolio fund, there are 12 underlying funds. And those underlying funds have been chosen according to your risk tolerance or how you came out of the questionnaire. So as I said earlier, if you came out of the questionnaire as a conservative investor, we would suggest that you have between 70 to 75% of your assets in fixed income. In the case of the conservative portfolio fund, As I said, there are 12 underlying funds. 75% of the assets are held in fixed income. In the case of the aggressive portfolio fund, all 12 of those underlying funds are in equities. Okay? And what we do is we actually rebalance these for you. At the end of every day, we look at which of the 12 underlying funds have increased in value, and we sell or redeem units in those funds, and we purchase units in the funds that have stayed the same or lost in value. And we bring it back in line with the original distribution that's indicated in the brochure at the end of every day. There is a theory behind this type of investing in terms of investing in asset allocation funds. It's indicated on the left-hand side in light blue, but in the interest of time, I'll have you read that at your convenience. So I mentioned how the portfolio funds are rebalanced automatically. So at the end of every day, we bring them back in line with that original distribution. Let's say you're picking the funds yourself, and perhaps upon coming out of the questionnaire, you come out as an aggressive investor. I'll just run you through a scenario of picking the funds yourself. Let's say you're going to pick a Canadian equity fund and a foreign equity fund. And let's say you're going to put 70% of your contributions into the foreign fund and the remaining 30% into, what did I say, 70% foreign? Let's go 70% Canadian equity and 30% foreign equity. So every dollar we receive will take 70 cents, buy units in the Canadian equity fund, the remaining 30 cents, and buy units in the foreign fund. But those two funds are going to perform at different rates. So that's not to say every statement you receive will reflect a 70-30 split between the two funds. Perhaps you receive a statement, all of a sudden you have your assets split 50-50 between the two funds. In this example, the foreign equity fund has done quite well and it has increased in value, and the Canadian equity fund hasn't done as well and potentially lost in value. If you would like to rebalance or get back to your original position in terms of how your future contributions are being invested, in this example, you would be selling or redeeming units in your foreign equity funds and purchasing units in your Canadian equity funds to get back to that original 70-30 split. What I'm trying to, the message that I'm trying to convey here is that if you are picking the funds yourself, you are taking on that responsibility. So periodically, you want to look at your statements, you want to go onto the website or call our call center, find out what the distribution of your portfolio is, and is there a need to rebalance? Maybe you got that statement in the example that I described, where all of a sudden you have a 50-50 split between Canadian equity and foreign equity. If you're okay with that, there's nothing for you to do. But if you would like to get back to your original position, then periodically, if you're picking the funds yourself, you are responsible for rebalancing. Okay. Just one more thing on the investments themselves. There are a number of fund reports contained in the brochure in front of you. The fund reports that are in there are actually new funds that became available on your plan on May the 1st of this year. Okay, and I'm just going to talk to that a little bit here now. First of all, there have been some changes to your fund menu, and just to explain how these changes came about, at Group Retirement Services, we offer 193 funds through various fund managers. We also have a responsibility as a service provider or a carrier to monitor the funds themselves as well as the fund managers. So on a semi-annual basis, we meet with each fund manager. On one occasion, we go to their place of business, and on another occasion, they come to our head office in London, Ontario. What we're doing is primarily we're looking at the performance of the funds themselves, but we're also looking at such things as the mandate of the funds. Are they following the mandate that they set when they initially set up the plan or set up the fund? We're also looking at such things as turnover within the fund manager themselves. Are there concerns that, you know, a fund has been performing great all along, and then all of a sudden the one individual or the fund manager leaves that company and moves on to another fund manager? Where does that leave the fund? Did they have a unique investment style that resulted in, you know, a positive performance on the fund itself, or is somebody going to come in and completely change the investment approach? So we're looking at things such as that. We're also looking at, is there a lot of turnover within a given fund manager? Are there concerns with the stability of the organization itself? So as a result of going through this investment manager review process on a semi-annual basis, we actually assign gradings to each fund, so similar to what you would have received in school, an A plus or a C minus. And upon review of the gratings themselves with both Kellen Wright Beauchamp and your pension committee here at the Perimeter Institute, some changes have been made to the fund lineup. So some funds have been added, other funds have been removed. Actually, there were a number of funds that were removed back on May the 1st because there were zero assets in those funds, so nobody was affected. But there are some funds that are being removed for which you have already received a communication on where there are assets, and there will be a point in time that I'll talk about in a moment here where you can either follow what we have suggested in terms of a suitable replacement for each respective fund, or you can make your own investment changes. Okay. So within the, if we can just go through the contents of the brochure that's in front of you. I'm going to focus on the left-hand side now. Starting off with the schedule of fees, all of the information that I have here, both the schedule of fees as well as the rates of return, reflect the new investment menu going forward. So there's no information here on the funds that are being removed or have been removed. But I do want to talk a little bit about the schedule of fees. Olga alluded to this earlier, the fact that you are paying a fee on the funds themselves, whether you're investing on your plan here, investing in segregated funds, or if you're investing outside of this plan, perhaps on a retail basis at your local bank or credit union, or maybe through an advisor or a broker. If you are investing in mutual funds, you are paying something called a management expense ratio, or an MER. Typically, the fees would be in the range of, let's say, 3%. And if you look at the fees on your plan here, it looks like the highest fee is just under 1.9%. So you might think, well, you know, big deal, whether I'm paying 3% or 1.9% or 2%, what's the difference? What's the big deal about 1%? Well, if you think of it in terms of negotiating your mortgage, let's say your mortgage comes up for renewal, you go to the bank and find out what the prevailing mortgage rates are. The difference of 1% can have quite an effect on your monthly payment. And it's the same thing with investments. If you're paying 1% higher in terms of the fee itself, your assets are going to grow that much slower than if you're paying a lower fee. So that's just sort of an introduction to the fees themselves. But just to explain the fees that are in front of you, these fees are investment management fees, and they also include GST. There is a portion of the fee itself that is not included, and that would be something called a fund operating expense. There is also a Simply Speaking document in behind the schedule of fees itself that explains the various fees that are charged. On a retail basis, they call it a management expense ratio, and that's it. That's the fee that you pay. As I say, typically they would be in the range of 3%. With our fees, they're actually broken up into a number of different components because the variables change every year. So the investment management fee itself remains the same. However, the GST that's charged is 7% for the next 15 days, which will be reduced to 6%. You're not going to notice a big difference there. But the fund operating expense does change on an annual basis. And just to explain the fund operating expense, it's an expense incurred by the fund manager themselves, expenses such as audit and custodial fees, transaction costs, bank fees, reporting costs, taxes as well. So those vary from year to year depending on how frequently they're trading between the underlying investments. And those numbers or that percentage is actually reported on the fund report itself. So if we can look at one of the fund reports, if you can flip past the schedule of fees, the Simply Speaking, the rates of return, we'll just look at the top one there. I believe it's the Trimark Income Growth Fund. In the upper left-hand corner, two rows there that are highlighted, it shows you the total fund operating expenses. And as you can see, they vary from year to year. So that's in addition to the investment management fee. And then GST is charged on both the fund operating expense as well as the investment management fee. Okay. Any questions on the fees themselves? Why can't we just have a management expense ratio and make it simple? Right. I'm thinking the same thing. Moving on, or actually, if I can get you to pull the rates of return to the front, I asked you to set them aside a moment ago, but if you can pull those to the front. Again, these the funds that are listed here reflect the new investment menu going forward. Okay. So just to explain these rates of return, they are gross rates of return, and they actually exclude the investment management fee itself, as well as GST on the investment management fee. So it gives you an idea overall of how the funds have performed, but you also receive these same gross rates of return with your statement. And if you have all of your money in ABC fund, and you receive your statement, look at the gross rates of return, and it says that on a one-year basis, the fund returned 10%. Don't think, great, I made 10% last year. You didn't make 10%. Just to explain the one-year rate of return, the assumption in the case of these rates of return is that you invested once. On June 1st, 2005, you bought units in ABC fund and you held them. You didn't buy any more units throughout the year. You didn't change your investment direction partway through the year. You held them. As well, as I said, it doesn't include the fact that you pay an investment management fee. So when you do get these gross rates of return with your statement, there is certainly value in that. It provides an overall idea of how the funds have performed, but not necessarily how your own individual investments have performed. Okay. So again, the fund reports there are just for the new funds that were added on May the 1st. Okay. In terms of the new funds that are being added, three of the funds are in fall under the asset class of balanced funds. So the Trimark Income Growth Fund, the Greystone Balanced Fund, as well as the Shear Rowett and Associates Balanced Fund. One Canadian equity fund being added that's managed by Jarislowsky Fraser. And in terms of foreign equity, there are actually four funds being added. So there's a McLean Budden American Equity Fund. Just to explain what TDQC is, it's Toronto Dominion Qualitative Capital, and the U.S. Equity Index Fund, as well as the Index Global Equity Fund, it invests money and it's trying to mirror a given index. So in the case of the U.S. Equity Index Fund, it's trying to mirror the S&P 500. In the case of the Global Equity Index Fund, I'm actually drawing a blank right now, but it's indicated on the fund report for that particular fund. And finally, the Trimark Global Equity Fund is being added as well. Okay, so funds being added in three different asset classes. No funds being added in fixed income or special equity. Okay, so as I said, it's my understanding that you all received a communication indicating what was taking place in terms of funds being added and deleted. We're going with more of a streamlined investment menu. As a result of looking at our investment manager review process, we've now gone with the best of the best funds that are offered. Perhaps there was a duplication of investment style in a given asset class, and we would look at the fund that was graded higher if there was a duplication, rather than, we could offer 20 bond funds, and if they're all investing in, you know, primarily the same thing, and as a result have the same rate of return, it doesn't really accomplish too much. So, as I said, we're going with a new investment menu. Assets in the funds that, or funds that had zero assets were actually removed on May the 1st, so you no longer have access to those funds. But there are some funds being removed that do have assets in them. So, I would encourage you to look at the communication itself, see if you do have any assets in those funds. Look at what we are proposing in terms of a suitable replacement for each respective fund. If you're comfortable with that, there's nothing for you to do, and we will automatically map or transfer your assets into the proposed fund during the week of, it's actually July, sorry. Yeah. Conflicting information there. So July the 4th is the start, and it's actually July the 4th to the 7th. Will be the period of time whereby the funds will be transferred into the new investments. Okay. So again, just to recap, what do you need to do? First of all, look at where your investments are held. Compare it to the communication that you have received. Chances are you may not even be affected by this. However, if you are, if you do have assets in the funds that are being removed, look at what we are proposing in terms of a suitable replacement. If you're comfortable with that, there's nothing for you to do. We will automatically transfer your assets during the week of July 5th to 7th. Alternatively, if you're not comfortable with what we're proposing and you would like to make your own investment changes, you have up until July the 4th to do that. So you can certainly make those changes. One thing to be aware of, though, is that it's actually a two-step process. So certainly you would have to transfer your assets out of a fund that is being removed into one of the funds that will continue to be available. But the second step is to change how your future investments are directed. So we don't want you trying to contribute money into a fund that we are attempting to remove. Okay? So how do you go about making a change? Certainly have access to our website. If you haven't got a clue what your login ID and password are, there is a contact card in your brochure there. You can call our call center between 8 in the morning and 8 at night, Monday to Friday. They will verify that you are who you say you are, and they'll reset your password and get you up and running on the website again. Alternatively, you can call the call center and just ask them to transfer between funds or change your future investment direction. You can actually call beyond the hours of 8 in the morning and 8 at night, Monday to Friday, but it's similar to telephone banking where you're punching different numbers to get different information. I find that very frustrating myself, so I would recommend that you call between 8 in the morning and 8 at night, Monday to Friday, or really your best bet is to go onto the website itself. Alternatively, as a third option, you can complete a member investment instruction form, and I believe that would be obtained from yourself. Is that correct? Okay. I'm sure you have it somewhere in a binder or something. Or you can get it off the website.
Electronically.
Yeah. Okay. So just a recap of the services themselves. Our website is grsaccess.com. I've already talked about the call center and their hours of operation, but I do want to focus on one number that is reported on your statement. I've talked about the gross rates of return and the fact that they do not include the investment management fees and GST, but on your statement, we actually provide you with a personal net rate of return. And I would ask that you look at that number when you receive the hard copy of your statement in the mail. But also, if you want to go onto the website, you can produce a statement for whatever period of time you want. You input the start date and the end date. You can produce a statement for a month or a quarter. Or perhaps you received your statement in the mail and maybe you lost some money and you got mad and you threw it out. Once you've calmed down a little bit, you can go back on the website and generate another one. The personal net rate of return takes into account the fact that you buy units in a fund every contribution. So you buy units at $12 a unit, others at $8 a unit, yet others at $10 a unit. You also pay a fee every day. So the fee that's listed there, we take off every day whether the fund makes any money or not. So every day we take off 1/365th of that fee. Okay. It also takes into account the fact that you may change your investment direction partway through a statement period. So I would encourage you to look at the one that you receive in the mail. But more importantly, feel free to go onto our website and generate your own statement and look at your rate of return for a given period of time. There is also some software available. Those of you receiving the new guides, the one that I see over there with a BlackBerry on it. Yes, you're my Vanna. They do contain a disk which contains retirement planning software. It is not specific to your plan. But it does give you an idea about what level of income you will require to live certain lifestyles at retirement. And we walk you through how to determine what level of income would be appropriate for the lifestyle that you're hoping to live. It also asks you what are your savings to date. And if you're married or living common law, I would suggest you put in combined savings of both you and your spouse or your common law spouse. It'll also ask you, what is your expected rate of return? And I had a glance at the rates of return while Olga was speaking, and I see a one-year rate of return of just under 67%. I see some Canadian equity funds on a one-year basis returning 30%, 20%. When this software asks you, what is your expected rate of return, please don't put in 20%. The odds of you getting a 20% rate of return every year between now and retirement are pretty slim. So maybe go with a more realistic number. Maybe go with 6% or 8%. If you do end up overachieving or getting a higher rate of return, great. You'll be pleasantly surprised. But don't overestimate how quickly your retirement assets will build. state. And that's all I have. Are there any questions at all? Any concerns? Everybody's happy?
Yeah.
Everybody's full? Yeah. Well, thank you for your time.
Great.